Frozen Shows is filmed in front of a live Twitch audience. Hey everyone, welcome back to Bros and Shows. I'm your host, Mahler, aka Josiah? I should have said Josiah first, but what does it matter? With me, as always, I got my buddy, I got my pal, I got my brother Austin. Austin, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. I can't complain. Austin, how was your week? Hey man, we haven't talked. We haven't done anything.
I don't think
we actually did do anything. We didn't play no games or anything this weekend because I was just so busy.
Yeah, no, I just haven't really been doing too much. I just been super busy for the last like couple like weeks, like weekends, that I decided just to take like a, you know, like a tone week. Like I just kind of toned it down a little bit. So I didn't really do too much. I just kind of chilled out, watched Lock and Key season one again, and then I just really didn't do anything. I just sat around, watched football, and I hung out with my mom. So kind of that's all it was. Our mom, yeah.
Wait, we have a mom?
Whoa.
That's good to hear, Austin. I have news for you. Whoa. And I've already told a couple people, but I don't think I've told you yet. I maybe have told you, I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. You got a new job?
Yes. So, yeah. I have a new job. It's in the same bank, whatnot. So, it's more or less just a lateral move where I'm just changing positions to another floor. Mm-hmm. But the big thing that's different about it is the schedule change. Instead of, I will be working Monday through Friday like normal, but I will be working from, in the very latest, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. every day. So I'll have my nights free.
So you got a grown-up job.
A grown-up job.
You got a grown-up job.
Yeah. So, yeah, my schedule changes. It shouldn't affect any of my vacation or whatnot, but it always could. Who knows? It always could. You know, who knows? But I'm excited for it. My official day starts on October 15th, which is a Saturday, but I think it's just because our work does a Sunday is the start of a new week work, so making the 15th my last day would mean that I get like the pay system wouldn't change. But technically, even though it's working 9 to 5, I could start like an hour or two early if I want. I think the manager said that I have the option of coming in early with some other people or just coming in whenever it is, but the latest I can get in is 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. So not bad. I think I'm pretty happy about that. And because of that, I'll have some more consistency instead of possibly getting overtime every Monday night or so. So we'll see. But it doesn't mean I will have to start going to bed at 10 p.m. So 10 or 11, you know, like around that time. So, Austin. You had me watch Netflix's Lock and Key. Let's get into it. Austin, how did you find out about the show / what do you know of Lock and Key?
So, I'd have to say 6 years ago. It was about 6 years ago. 6 years ago, my buddy Travis, who we had on the podcast when he did like, I forget what we did, Hawkeye. We did Hawkeye with him. He introduced me to this book, this graphic novel series, and he said, this is the best graphic novel comic book series outside of superheroes that I love. And I was like, okay. So I decided to listen to it, actually. There was an Audible that came out like a couple years later, and it involved like Haley Joel Osment and a couple other people, and it was like well put together. It was like one of, it's exactly like if you've listened to Sandman, it's a full cast and there's sound effects and stuff, but you can tell that it's old though, because, like, you know, sometimes the audio is not, like, leveled properly. And it's kind of, you know, I was intrigued. I've really enjoyed the graphic novel that now, of course, I've owned it for a couple years now. My wife bought me the whole collection for Christmas instead of me reading it on digital, because I have it on Kindle. There was, like, when the show aired, they had a certain type of book, ebook special, where you could read the whole series for free. And I never got around to doing that. But I read Lock and Key, and I fell in love with the graphic novel so much. And I also was kind of jumped on because Joe Hill and Robert Rodriguez, I think that is, or Gabriel Rodriguez. Joe Hill, if no one knows who Joe Hill is, Joe Hill is the son of Stephen King, the you know, the biggest horror writer of all time. You know, he did It. He did, like, you know, like The Mist. Yeah. There's just so many books he ever did. Dark Tower series is a huge one. So when I found out it was Joe Hill, I was like, I have to check this out now. I read it, I fell in love, and I found out Netflix was doing an adaptation to it. And I remember, like, there was talks about this show before having a series adaptation on Fox, and they did a pilot episode, if I remember. They did a pilot episode, and it was so, it scared people so much. They said it was too scary. They ended up canceling the pilot episode. Like, they just axed the whole thing. And then they were trying for a three-part series movie. And it was going to be directed by Steven Spielberg at one time. And everyone was, like, on board with that, but it didn't go anywhere. And then out of nowhere, Netflix picks up Lock and Key. And I was like, yes, Lock and Key. I'm so excited. I have to say, that's how I found the Lock and Key series, was because of that. I fell in love with the book, and then I found out that they were making the series, so I had to jump on board and see how the adaptation was.
How close does the Netflix series follow the books? Like, are they one-to-one comparison, or do they, like, fall off a lot?
So the problem is, like, I can't really talk a lot about the books, because there's things that they do in certain seasons that happen in earlier, but they make it happen later, and then there's things that happen later happen earlier. And I don't want to, like, you know, until we series.
I'm not asking you to, like, talk about it in, like, depth.
But is it well adapted? Yes, it is. It's not Sandman well adapted, but it's decently adapted. Like, it got the premise by it. It did exactly what it needed to do.
Okay, that was the main thing I wanted to ask with that, was, like, do you feel like you could watch it and be like, oh, I'm a fan of the graphic novels or the books or whatever they are, and I am okay and happy with this adaptation?
Yeah, I am okay with this adaptation.
Okay.
So, yep.
All right. Well, Austin, so, I will talk about my personal experience with Lock and Key. I like the premise of it. I like the concept of it. I'll be honest, the show did not grip me all that much for most of it. It's going to be a thing that I'm definitely going to get into it more later. But if being honest, if this was a show I watched, the first season of, and, like, I didn't have someone telling me you should watch it, I don't know if I would continue. Because here's the thing. Well, concept of the key system, interesting. The, like, the story and everything that they do, it's interesting. But I have a hard time liking the characters that are presented. That is my honest issue that I have with the show.
I think I know there's a character that you probably don't like so far.
You could name any character and I would have an issue with them.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
They're don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like it's legitly like this character is the worst character in the world. I hate them. It's like this character did this or acted this way or functions this way, and that's super frustrating.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a consistent thing where I'm like, ugh, these people. Ah, these people. And
these dumb kids.
Dumb kids. You could say dumb kids. You could say, like, stupid adults. Obvious, like, people doing things for plot reasons versus, like, functionally doing something. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole episode in the end, because, like, we're at this point, we assume if you're watching this, you watch the whole season. Like, that's how we do Bros and Shows, right?
Yeah.
The ending of the first season where they have the mom's friend, who was the friend of the father's, turn out to be, like, behind or what's that term? Where you, like, abet someone or help someone with a crime?
Yeah, she kind of, like, lured Dodge to... Sam and Dodge to them to get the keys.
Yeah, not just that. Like all the stuff of how she was like there when Echo or whatever his name is, like Lucien or I forget the guy's name. The one who picks a key and becomes the woman who everyone calls Echo.
Lucas Dodge.
Dodge. Okay. Yeah. I'll just call her Dodge. I don't know why.
It's easier to say Dodge.
It's so much easier to say Dodge than
Lucas.
But like she was like a necessity of crime to Dodge. She never once like fought back against them. Because obviously she had like some issues in her head with believing that was Lucid. Whatever it is, Lucas. But it was frustrating to like watch each time like she was doing something and like being sketchy. And then the point where I actually went like, that's dumb, like actually verbally said that's stupid, whenever she was there at the scene where the Dodge like puts the bag over the one dude's head who catches them.
Oh yeah, the detective. Or no, not the detective.
It was the English teacher.
The superintendent.
Yeah, yeah, or whoever. The nice guy. The good guy. The guy who didn't deserve to die. Which, you know, Sean Astin. Hey, rip Beth. Anyways, during that scene, like the whole bag system. And then I recall later whenever they're like, we couldn't find no IDs or prints or anything like that. Meanwhile, in the scene, she's over there touching everything. And I'm just like, no prints, huh? You're just gonna sit here and say they didn't like look for anything. They didn't try anything. Like I get getting prints from scenes is a lot harder than people think it is. Than like the crime shows make it believe. But you're going to tell me that no one saw him go to her house or her go to his house or the fact that this Lucas guy / Dodge person is walking around half-heartedly, mind you, turning two different people.
Yeah.
It legitimately made me frustrated to like watch that. And I'm like, this is so stupid.
Oh yeah.
I will say I enjoyed in the very beginning with the one guy like using the fire key to kill himself. I was like, all right, well, they're never going to explain that, I guess. And then at the end, it's like, yeah, he just knew where all the keys were, so he just killed himself. And I was like, baller move. Thank goodness. At least someone who's, like, smart does that. I always hate it in shows when it's like, I am the keeper of all this knowledge. I'm too scared to die. Take yourself, man. Go out. Keep everything safe. But nothing made me more frustrated and upset than when... the boy, I'm going to forget all their names for at least one more season.
I gotcha.
The son, who sleeps with Tyler. Dodge, which was hilarious. Tyler?
Yeah, Tyler's the older boy.
Tyler puts the key in the one kid's head.
Yep.
And then that kid has a 180 turn. And he's like, oh, I messed up, I'm so sorry, blah, blah. He's like going off. And my brain's like, why is he acting like this? does he have some form of mental, like someone altered his memory or something? Because it's not like seeing some type of magic thing is going to change him when he had the fire key that could literally start things on fire. And I'm like, why is he suddenly realizing that he was in the wrong for doing all this stuff when he torched down multiple places and knew the magic worked? But now whenever the key's in his head, he thinks differently. That didn't make sense to me. I don't know if I missed something in that scene. And then oh boy. Speaking of characters, I'm going to rant for a second. I'm sorry for anyone listening. The mom character makes me super frustrated. I'm glad that they explain like the whole magic system, essentially. Like when they become adults, they forget, or at least that we know of.
So I'm going to say one thing about this. So there is some details in the graphic novel that are different from the show. Like they try to fix things, and I understand, but I think they shouldn't have done it. One of the things that I really do not like about the show is how Nina is set up.
Nina's the mom, right?
Nina's the mom.
Okay.
Actually, in the comic book, she's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
She's not a recovering alcoholic. In the show, she's a recovering alcoholic. Mm-hmm. But in the comic, she is an alcoholic.
Okay.
So the reason why she sees magic is because she's drunk. And that plays later on in the series, you'll see.
Well, they've already explained that. Because she started drinking, and she starts remembering all the stuff. Yeah. And that's when Tyler and his sister were, like, talking about it. It's because she's drinking, which doesn't make sense to me. I will be honest. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But it's funny to know it's like we lose our mom either way. It's either she doesn't remember anything or she's drunk. Yeah. I'm like, she's a pretty high-functioning alcoholic. If you just control how much she consumes, you could, like, in theory, like, treat it like any other form of medication and just give her enough to remain, like, cognitive of stuff and remembering the magic, which sounds weird to say, but it's possible.
The reason why she became an alcoholic, the other thing that bothers me about this series is it tries to be kid-friendly a lot. And the graphic novel is not that way. Now I'm gonna state this.
It's because it was too scary for ABC.
So I'm gonna say some things I know about the comic that should bring a little bit of light why I think that the alcoholism should still be there.
Okay.
For Nina's character, and that's because in the show, Rendell Locke is knows about key house. He knows about the keys and everything like that.
Yeah.
And Dodge sends Sam Lesser to kill Rendell and get the keys. So in the show, he gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nina, I think, gets shot too. She gets shot in the leg.
She gets shot in the leg in the beginning, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Which
that's not
that was a stupid scene. That was a stupid scene too. Because like the guy pulls a gun on him, and then he shoots his wife, and then he stops, like, oh no, oh. And then the guy straight up shoots him, accidentally, be it. But my brain's like,
no.
If I was Locke, I would be like, you want information? I'm the only one who knows this information. You can't kill me. If you kill everyone I love, you leave nothing for me to be worried about with you. I'm going to come at you and attack you. You shoot anyone? I'm going to kill you. You kill me, you lose information. It's a lose-lose for you. It could lose for me too, but if I throw myself at you faster than you can shoot my loved ones, you're done. And when he shoots her, I would instantly have lunged at him, which he goes to and then stops like an idiot.
Okay, so in the graphic novel, it's totally different. And it is toned down so bad in the show that it ruined it for me in a way.
Interesting.
So what happens is in that scene, Sam Lesser is with another person and they come to find Rendell Locke. Both of them do find Rendell Locke, but Tyler, McKenzie, and Brody all hide. And McKenzie ends up hiding with Brody on top of the roof behind the chimney. And Rendell Locke gets shot in the face and his eye is exposed. Like you could see a huge hole in his face.
Yeah.
he dies, and then the other accomplice that's with Sam Locke ends up sexually assaulting Nina in the comic, and it's pretty bad. Like they don't show it, but they allude to it that, like, you know, she was sexually assaulted after Randall Locke was killed. But the Sam Lester ends up getting knocked out by a hammer, which happens in the show, by Nina. And then the other accomplice goes down in the basement and knows that Tyler's down there. And Tyler in the show is this kid that's kind of like a jock in a way. Tyler comics is a redneck kind of guy, kid. He has a ball cap that has like a fishing lure on it. There's a reason why there's a fishing lure on it. Later on, we'll talk. But what happens is he actually beats that dude to death with a brick. Like, murders that dude.
Okay.
And then he ends up hitting... Then it fast forwards to them coming to Key House. And I think that Nina having that alcoholism is because she explains, like, she was sexually assaulted after her husband was murdered. And that's traumatizing. And it makes one other scene in the show that would have made it 10 times better if it was like how the comic was. And the scene is where she gets drunk and tries to put his urn in. She does that. She does become drunk. But I think being an alcoholic, there's a lot of other things that happen in the comics that makes her a character that you want to root for. This person, how I see, I don't feel like rooting for her because I'm like, well, you know, she kind of like the kids. I don't know. I feel like the kids are very unsupervised in the comics, and this one, she's very supervised. So like things just, they blame it on the magic all the time. And that's not how it is in the comics.
All right, you know, so
it's more of like her just being neglectful because she was brutally murdered, or she was brutally assaulted.
From what you tell me there, I'm glad they changed that. Because the sexual assault and the person who performs it with the situation leads to nothing.
Yeah.
I think the gruesomeness of how Locke got killed, or Randall died, I think they should have kept it. I think it should have been horrifically gruesome. So that way, that's what dramatized her. She doesn't need to be assaulted that way to become an alcoholic. Watching your husband die in front of you, get murdered in front of you, is enough to do.
Well, it also leads into a bunch of other character arcs about how Tyler feels like he could have done something to prevent that. And it leads into her realizing that she needs to be there for her family later on in the comics.
But both of those could still function though. Like, I don't think they need that. That's one of those situations where I'm like,
changed it. So.
Well, that's one of those things. Like, one of the issues I've always had with like books or whatever is whenever they add like rape and things like that as a caveat to be like, oh, this will make them be a stronger female, or this is something that like females have to deal with. It's like, you don't need that. You don't need you don't ever see that with male characters all that much. And that's where I get frustrated with, is that it's like, oh, we'll do it to the female characters, but the males, who cares? You don't need that. You don't need that in a story to make a character compelling. Anyone, if she was a guy and she watched her wife get brutally assaulted, like murdered in front of her, and then she became an alcoholic, you wouldn't have any problems with that. Freaking Frank Castle watches his family gets murdered in front of him, and he becomes like a murderous rampager. You know, no one has issues with that. That's my personal take on that. You mentioned the son feeling like he could have done something. I think that's understandable. But I think from what you told me in the books, or in the graphic, is it a graphic novel or is it a book?
It's a graphic novel.
Graphic novel, okay. In the graphic novels of him murdering the guy, that to me felt like he did something. Like he
did something.
But then in the show, how they show it, where he's at the door and he's locked out and he's like trying to go and he's and everything starts happening. that to me seems like a situation of I could have done something. Like, I could have punched the door, I could have like rammed it, I could have done something, I could have possibly have saved Dad. Which he does go through that in the show. He has those moments.
And there's a moment where the thing is with Nina, though, on the other hand, as a character, she gets more of a character development in the show than she does in the book, like in the novels.
Okay.
Because she becomes like a detective. She wants to solve why Randall died. In the book, she doesn't do that. She just grieves the whole time. And she neglects her family. The person that solves the crime or is trying to solve the crime is actually the detective the whole time. You know, the one that she starts like hanging out with, you know, starts being buddy buddy with.
Mm-hmm. The cop dude.
He's the one that actually starts like trying to solve stuff. And there's a couple other things that they never did in the novel. You know, like if you want me to, I can go through it.
No, like, that's just some of the short fine.
Stuff. Man. But we could talk about more stuff, and then I could bring it up and be like, "Hey, this wasn't part of it."
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Which I think is a pretty methodical system of it. Like the Nina character, I view as a tragic character, and whenever you find out that it's like she forgets things and everything of that sort, you kind of just are like, okay, that explains how she acts so weird and how other people act so weird. Who's the other kid that comes over all the time?
Rufus.
Okay. Rufus is the brother.
One of my favorite characters in the novels.
Wait, hold on. Are we thinking of the same person? I'm talking about the guy who like they give the memory to and he looks at it and sees like him murdering.
Oh, that's Duncan.
Duncan. That's Duncan. Yeah, Uncle Duncan. That's who I was talking about.
Yeah.
Is he real? Like, he's the brother of
Randall.
Okay. Just making sure. So even like, okay, even the okay, yeah. Because I remember the one girl said that she, they figured out a way to not forget.
Yeah.
Okay. it's just the concept or everything of it is a little like, I don't understand.
I will say this. The first season of the show has a lot of questions. They do get answered.
I'm sure they do.
And there's reasons.
My questions are not questions of like, oh, what's this? What's that? Mine is more like, why? Like, okay, you have these magical keys that only kids can do. Why? You have these magical keys that, granted, when I saw the Omega sign, my first instant thought process was Alpha and Omega. There's going to be an Alpha key. There's an Omega key. Omega is obviously the end of time. Alpha is the beginning of time or whatnot. So I'm like, okay, Omega, this is like the door to the apocalypse, or is it how the world's going to end, or it's stopping something like horrifically bad. That's instantly why I came to. But then it's like, why the heck would they make it that kids are only able to do it and adults free? I'm like, that's the stupid, whoever created this, if it was like some god created it, they're just like, I love children. Only children can end the world and protect it. Those are my questions. And I'm like,
I'm going to state this. That is not part of the graphic novel.
Oh, the Alpha door?
No, the Alpha door is, but not remembering the magic.
Oh, okay.
Is not a thing about children can't remember that. That is not a thing that happens.
Okay, so adults could easily just remember it in the graphic.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
It's just they can see the magic, but they can't, like, they forget it later.
Yeah,
it doesn't stay with them. So, like, but they can still see it. That's the thing that, like, I was a little upset about. I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. Because there's a part in the graphic novel where I was like, okay, what about when this scene happens? And I was like, oh, okay, I see how it works. I was like, whatever. But no,
I agree. That is something that I'm like, that's stupid. That seems like one of the things that they do for whenever they're trying to make, like, a kid show. It's like, look, what was it? There was another show that was like that. maybe it was Digimon. I can't remember. But it was a show like only kids could see or interact with something. And so like the adults couldn't.
Was it the Digimon movie?
Yeah, in the Digimon movie, whenever Agumon first shows up and fights Parrotmon, only the kids saw it, but adults couldn't see it, and they thought it was a suicide bomber or some form of like attacker in the area. It was Digimon. But then like when they came to the world, everyone saw them, so it's like, oh yeah, it doesn't freaking matter for some reason. I don't know, it seems retconny. If in the books they have it that everyone can remember the magic or whatnot. This is my thought process. At first, until she said, like, we found a way to stop us from forgetting, I thought what it was going to be is that, like, they were purposely going around anyone who was part of it and removing the memory from them to keep them, like, out of the loop. And I'm like, that makes sense. Which didn't they do to the brother, right?
Yes, they did that to Duncan because Duncan murders one of their friends because he gets attached.
I thought Duncan saw.
No, Duncan did.
Duncan saw Rendell killed him.
Yeah. So in the that is exactly what happens in the book. But it's actually who gets murdered is the guy that has the matchstick key.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually the one that gets murdered. He gets murdered, and then his girlfriend gets murdered.
Okay.
And then Rendell kills the guy that is Dodge at that time because Dodge is a demon. And
They didn't specify that she was a demon yet, but.
Well, yeah. So, like.
Thanks for the spoiler alert.
Whatever. I thought they alluded to that in a way.
I didn't think they did. Because they only called her. They called her an Echo.
Yeah. So an echo is a, so we saw in the show where, Ellie. Yeah, it's Ellie, the Rufus's mom.
Mm-hmm.
She comes and she uses the wishing well key and she asks to see Dodge again.
I'm realizing who Rufus is. Rufus is the military kid.
Yeah, so in the book, he's like the coolest person ever because he wears a helmet and he's always like, right on duty, sir. Mm-hmm. I die every time. When I come out and see you again, or like when we see each other, I'm going to show you the comics and you're going to laugh at like some of the people and how they're drawn and how they are in the show.
Portrayed.
And
you're
like, what the heck? But Rufus is like one of my favorite characters of all time. But she uses the wishing well key. And then she uses the Echo Key to talk to Dodge. And at the time, Dodge manipulates her into being like, hey, we can be back together again, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, which we saw, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that's pretty legit of how it was
in the comic. Here's my question, then, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. So, how they basically explain Lucine, or Lucid, or whatever his name is, the original boy, Dodge. Lucas.
Yeah.
Lucas. No, not Dodge. Lucas.
Well,
that Lucas, they opened the door and one of those pebble things hit him, which infected him with the demon, aka Dodge or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then they killed him.
Yes.
And then she goes in and she uses the key to ask to talk to Lucas. But then the demon shows up instead of Lucas.
Yes.
That doesn't make sense.
Because what you come to find out, well, man, I can't really say this.
Then don't say it. Just say,
okay.
Wait for...
I think just wait for that seasons. Because they kind of explain why...
It's going to be dumb. It's going... If it's dumb, I'm going to be upset. Because it's going to be like...
I don't know how you're
going
to take that.
Because here's the thing, right? Because, Austin, you know me. I overthink crap. This is why I like lore and video games and whatnot. Because I like to overthink things. If the key allows you to speak to people from the past, like the dead or whatnot, or the Echo Key, she specifically asked for Lucas, not the murdered Lucas. And I would assume if it went off of the person's memory of that person, it wouldn't go off. She wouldn't remember how he was, that single like frame that he got killed. but rather what he was before then. I'm like, it doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. Unless you find out later on that, like, the Lucas, like Dodge or whatever, is Lucas, but, like, whatever hit him just, like, changed his mind permanently. But then I don't understand how the Echo Key works. Is it summoning the soul? Is it not? What's the point of the Echo Key if you have the freaking soul key or the ghost key that allows you to talk to dead people? If she remembers the keys, why didn't she look for that key to go be with it? I don't know, man. There were so many things that frustrated me.
It's hard. It's so hard to talk about this. What I love about Lock and Key, and what I loved and what fell in love with the graphic novel, is everything that you're saying right now is exactly what I love about Lock and Key, is there's so many open-ended stuff, but they explain later. I promise you they'll explain later.
I'm sure they
will.
Some
of the questions you have. And there are payoffs. There are great payoffs for this.
Yeah.
You know, because there is some things that they didn't do in season one, but then they do it in season three, and you're like, whoa, what happened with that? And then they do something in season two where it's supposed to happen at the end of the book, and you're like, why the heck are they doing that? And then it rolls into, like, why.
I will say this. Mm-hmm. There, I don't know if, like, certain things they changed about this show. There are some really stupid moments.
Yeah, and it's really like CW moments.
Like, not even CW moment. Like, CW moments back in, like, 2000 CW moments.
Yep. Like, Arrow and Smallville.
Like, well, Arrow had, like, decent story for the first two seasons, and then it went downhill hardcore. I will hold to that. I still think Arrow season one, season two were good, and then the rest I couldn't care less for. But, like, for instance, you know, here's a couple of the stupid things that I find eye-rolling. I rolled multiple times during the season. Series, or whatnot. Number one. Whenever Rufus talks to his mom and says she thinks I'm dumb, and she talks around me and she jokes, but I pay attention, and he pulls up a bag of keys that he knows where she is, and I'm like, why would Dodge not keep the keys in a safe, defined place? Like, I get, like, you underlook this person. Why would she not keep it on her at all times? That makes no freaking sense. I actually thought at that point it was going to be that she's talking to Rufus, thinking that that's Rufus, and it was going to be revealed that that was actually Dodge. And she was using that as a way to find the Omega Key and get there, because that whole scene makes so much more sense if you think about it. That Rufus is Dodge. Just how Rufus, like, gets there and he's just like, these are the keys, this is that. Convinces his mom to, like, tells the truth. And then the son, like, they all give her the key. Everything makes so much more sense when Rufus is Dodge. And then they just get home and it's just like, where have you been? And it's Dodge. And I'm like, well, that was a dumb scene now, just because Dodge is not Rufus. Or even if Dodge was the mom, it would make sense. But no, the whole function of it makes no freaking sense.
So in the graphic novel, there is no bag of keys.
Okay.
So all the keys that are there, no one else possesses except for one person, which I'm not going to talk about until we watch the whole series, because it will ruin it. But all the other keys are in the house. There is no key that's not in the house. They have to stay in the house, because, like, how the graphic novel works is the only key that can leave Key House and be operated off property is the nowhere key, or anywhere key.
The anywhere key, which makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But they threw that out from the first 5 seconds of the show, whenever the guy burns himself alive with the fire key. So yeah,
which that key does not exist. That is a key that was made for the series.
Okay.
The other key that was not made for this. Oh, there was one other key. Oh, the mirror key, where Nina goes into the mirror.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. That does not exist in the graphic novel. And the key that Dodge uses to swap, like, her...
Change faces.
His face. Actually, there's two keys that's supposed to be. That's supposed to be the gender key, and then they have the look key. So, like, you could flip your gender. So, like, there's a part in the graphic novel where like Rendell plays a sick joke on Duncan and like becomes a woman and like hits on him for like 6 months and like changes back and he's like, it was me, your brother, the whole time. And he was like, I hate you. and they like fool, you know, because what's different is when you look back at like the past with Rendell and all them, it's you come to find out that they were very reckless with the keys. And it leads into, like, you know, Dodge being who he is. And that's why you see Kinsey and Tyler and Brody be a little bit more responsible with keys, except the head key. Of course, they were not responsible with the head key at all. Which, I like how they did the head key in the show. Because I think doing the other one's cool, but I think it would have been weird. And they changed something that I liked because it brought a more crazier aspect to it. So the head key, like how it is in the novel, is when they unlock the key, your head comes off. Like your top of your head, it's like a dome comes off. And inside your head is whatever your stuff is. So like when they open up Brody's head, it's just like a bunch of T-Rexes and like balloons and carnivals and stuff. And they're just picking stuff. And like there's memories. There's a part, you know, like in the show, we talked about how in the show it shows Kinsey going into hers, and she sees like a something attack her.
Yeah, the fear.
Yeah, her fear. Now I'm just making sure so I don't crisscross. Did she do anything with fear yet?
Yeah.
Okay. She
goes in, she kidnaps it, and she kills it.
So what happens in the graphic novel is she actually, since it's in the head and it's so small, she just takes it out of her head and puts it in a jar and like closes the jar and hides it under her bed. Which I liked that they did it this way, where like you like walk into a doorway and fear was like bigger. It felt more of like a threat than what it was in the novel. So I will give dibs there. The other key that they don't come across at all is in the graphic novel, the two keys that took place in this, those keys, was the Firestick key and the mirror key. There was a key that's in the living room that Tyler discovers, which you won't see, where he can grow massive. Like it's like this huge wooden key and he puts it in like the window and he locks it and he becomes like a giant. Which in the graphic novel, we'll talk later about like how that gets when, when Dodge steals the key to the Crown of Shadows, Tyler actually unlocks himself to be giant, and he fights her with like these big shadow creatures. And it is like one of the coolest things in like the novels of all time. So, you know, there's a couple things that like, those keys are different, but some of those things don't make sense. Like with when they did the bag of keys, I was like, why? Why did you do all that?
Stupid scene. You know what the other stupid scene was?
Yeah, go ahead.
At the very end, whenever he stabs her with the glow stick cord, and she gets KO'd and they all go downstairs and they're like, is that her? Did we knock her out? We have to throw her into the door or whatnot. Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
I'm about to just say, and I know exactly what you're about to go like, with.
Where's the crown? They're all like, we don't have time to think about that. I'm like, no, we do. In fact, that's what we should be only talking about right now. And they go and take her and throw her into the door. And I'm like, also, why are you guys throwing her in the door? Because like she wants the door, like that's the whole thing that we know for sure, is that it's like she wants that Omega key for the door for some reason. Why are you guys gonna throw her in there? They ask no questions, it all happens and whatnot, it ends. I totally thought for a bit that the sister was Dodge, like she knocked her out and she took the sister's place. I am frustrated with how little Dodge manipulates people by becoming the other people. And I thought they were like setting you up for a situation of, it's like, who is Dodge in this scenario? Because obviously that person on the ground is not Dodge. Who is actually Dodge? And when the sister grabs the key from the brother, my brain went, okay, the sister's clear. What is the brother going to do to clear him? And you're like supposed to sit there and like look for it and everything. That's what I thought they were going to do. And then nope, they just throw her in there. And all the big surprise is that the big surprise was a stupid surprise.
Now, I'm going to tell you this.
She's like, oh, I'm going to take over the thing. I'm going to stop and take this time to transform the mom into me to plan ahead and then throw her like then whenever she gets taken out, I'm going to just drag her into this room. I slapped her, but that's enough for her to be knocked out for nearly 2 hours, it seems. Dude,
what really ticks me off is like when she wakes up in the door and she's grabbing Tyler.
Uh-huh.
Why wouldn't she say, hey, Dodge switched our bodies?
Or like, I'm not Dodge or something like that. Dodge. Or no, like tell Rufus I love him. I'm sorry. Yeah. That would easily make him be like, what?
Whoa.
But no, she was just like, nah, nah.
That is one of the biggest pet peeves. Now
and
I'm gonna say this.
Also, okay, side note. When they open the door, who's the one like British kid?
Oh, it's the African-American dude.
I just don't know his name. I find hilarious that the brother Tyler is like, we open this door, like dodge any of those like things that are coming out, like don't let those things touch you. They open the door and he instantly steps out in front of the door. And I'm like, this freaking kid is an idiot. These kids are all idiots.
Okay, so I'm gonna tell you a couple things.
Uh-huh.
One, that door does not get open. Mm-hmm. Until the end of the series.
Okay.
The other thing is,
it shouldn't have been opened.
It shouldn't have been opened completely. I agree. I think it's stupid because it ruins from the ending of the graphic novel. The other thing is no one gets thrown into that door at all.
Mm-hmm.
The other problems that I do have is that switching of the bodies thing never happens in the graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
There is a switching of the body somewhere, but it's not the person you think it is. And I think it's a better... I think the graphic novel does that better.
When they finally did the body switch, they did it in the worst way possible. And it made me frustrated. It legitimately made me frustrated.
But I will say this. There was a scene that I loved with Dodge. But there was also that line right after that. Was cringe, the part where Billie Eilish's song.
Oh, you should see me in the crown.
I love that scene, but then it was instantly ruined when Dodge said, "Oh, what was that stupid thing Dodge said?" There's something stupid. It ticked me off. I was like,
"Oh, hello, darkness, my old friend."
Yeah, that's what it was. I was like, stop.
When that happened, my brain instantly went like, "Why would you take a song like a pop song, right, and play it to this?" But not play Hello Darkness, My Old Friend. You know, like you can't play one song and then reference another song. And I'm not going to say Hello Darkness is better than Crown, but my brain is also like, Hello Darkness has a lot more like popularity than Billie Eilish's Crown. I love Billie Eilish, but if you start saying Hello Darkness, My Old Friend, everyone instantly goes, oh, I love that song. You start saying, you should see me in a crown. Only a select few people will get that. It was in that moment that she said that. And I went, you can't put a song in as the overtune and reference a better song. That's like having a movie in your movie. That's a better movie than your movie. You don't do it.
The other thing is that does not happen in the novel.
Of course.
I mean, does not happen in the show. That happens in the novel. One other thing is the scene where Dodge is with Brody in around the fire,
mm-hmm.
and he realizes that she can't take the keys from him.
Yeah.
That is not part of the graphic novel. Dodge literally steals keys from these people. That's how she breaks in and steals the crown and the keys and all the other keys. Like she steals almost every single key.
Does she have like the ghost powers that she has? in the show?
No. Okay, she's not why, as powerful
that's
as
why
that.
They did. That's why they did. Because my one issue I had was whenever she's like, throw him up against the wall or whatnot. And I'm like, oh, you can just suffocate someone to death? Okay.
Like the scene where she gets, the girl shoots Dodge.
Mm-hmm. And she just gets up like that hurt.
That does not happen. And Dodge is only limited to being a human. And Dodge will die, but he will be resurrected as an Echo again. And he can leave. Because the only way, you learn in the comic books, the only way to get rid of an Echo is to throw an Echo into the well house.
Yeah. Which would make so much more sense. Because my instant issue, whenever I'm like, oh, she can kill them. My brain went to, why doesn't she just kill the kids and then take it off their corpse?
Yeah, so in the graphic novel, why she like manipulates her and Rufus is because she's still in love with Dodge. And she thinks that Dodge is actually the person that is Lucas. Like, yeah, he's yeah, in yeah. it. It's not Dodge. And like through the whole graphic novel, you don't, Dodge is living with them as Gage, like the boy.
Yeah.
And she's like, this is my distant cousin. And that's when Mackenzie starts falling in love with him in the graphic novel. But how the ending works in the first part of the graphic novel that they kind of try to do here was Sam Lesser shows up. He ends up getting murdered by being Dodge ends up killing Sam Lesser, and then the police show up because the detective has found out that Sam Lesser is out, and they show up. And I don't know if I should do this.
Then if you have to ask yourself, should I do it? Don't do it.
Well, the thing is like it's one of those things that they didn't do at the beginning of the series, but they do it in like the third season.
Then don't do it.
But it's like a good like 10-minute thing. It's not like a big thing.
Then just we'll reference it in season 3.
We'll reference in 3. But yeah, it's totally different. There, you know, and it goes on, and you know, Dodge is the main baddie throughout the whole series. You know, and that's what I like about the graphic novel. And there's so much stuff that has changed that they put in the show that's not part of the graphic novel. And that's one of the things that I was upset with, because the door thing upset me. Mm-hmm. I was like, why are they opening the door? Why are they opening the door?
I don't know. That was super stupid. I know why they opened the door is because they wanted to do the whole buy switch thing and be like, ooh. But if they would have just thrown her down the well, then she would just been like, I'm still here. I'm not her. And then the whole thing wouldn't make sense.
Yeah.
And so that's why they threw her in the door, which was stupid. And then furthermore, the whole idea that Dodge was in the group with them, opened the door, and then chose to let them close it and move on. Like, I'm like, why? At that point, I would just turn, put on the crown, and then just push them all into the door and continue doing what I want. It makes no freaking sense. It makes no sense.
Because in the novel, like when Dodge does the crown, she attacks the house multiple nights. It's not just one night. It's like they fight the demons off, like the shadow monsters off, with the lights and everything like that. And she gets to a point where she gets so mad, she becomes like this huge shadow monster. And that's when Tyler unlocks himself and starts beating the crap out of her, which is one of the best cool things in the novel. And I was so upset they didn't do it here.
It's the equivalent of the octopus thing in Watchmen. Yeah. Everyone wanted the octopus of glory.
I wanted the octopus of glory.
I still hold that the octopus of glory would have been nice, but I'm more happy how they did it in the book. I mean, in the movie than in the book. It makes more sense and more grounded.
There's a couple character changes too. Mm-hmm. Kinsey's friends are actually in the graphic novel. They are a bunch of like hardcore punk rockers. And they don't do a movie together. It's just, you know, they're just renegades, rebels. And it's actually kind of fun because they get themselves in a lot of problems, which you'll see we'll talk about later on in the series, but I totally understand where you're coming from. I feel the same way. There's a lot of things that I feel that were not done properly. But I like the concept.
The concept is good. The execution of things and the reasoning for things makes me frustratingly mad. There was another show that we did that was like this, but I can't remember what show that
was. It's because, and I think, you know, me and Travis talked about this because we are huge fans of this graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
And we both came to the conclusion that the thing that's holding this down the most is it trying to be kid friendly. And there's, because some of the things that does happen, you know, like the whole, you know, the music box thing, actually, she doesn't do it on the bowling at school. And when that happened, I rolled my eyes. I hated it so much. I was like, why? Why is Kenzie? Because the thing is why I like Kenzie as a character myself was because she was just this person that was trying to seek who she was, like who she was. She was trying to become her own person. And then in the graphic novel, you see Tyler as a kid that has lost his dad, like the dad that taught him how to fish, how to like do things around the house and to be a big brother to Brody. And then he completely neglects Brody in the comics because he doesn't know how to do it because it reminds him of his father. And then Brody's just that annoying little brat.
I will say this. The different kids, I'm fine with how they're presented in the show. The sister obviously just does not know when to stop, and that frustrates me. I really like the idea that now that she got rid of her fear, she doesn't adhere to like social standards all that much. I like that. Like the whole scene with the bully when she went above and beyond, my brain's like, it's because she has no fear of repercussion. She got rid of her fear. Fear is important to have in the person because that's what allows them to like connect into empathy and things along like that. My thing that I have the issue with in this show is, according to this, she gave that key to the other dude, who is Dodge, right?
Yes.
Why would Dodge not be like, this is all I need? Mackenzie, follow me. And then the other kid's like, whoa, what the heck? And then I'd be like, you forget this. Let's walk to your house. Tyler, bring me all your keys. You give all your keys to me. Brody, you give me all your keys. Bubba, do all that stuff. And it's like, Bubba, walk off the cliff. But what? Bad writing. Why would you have him be the one who uses the thing?
And that's Netflix. That is not Joe Hill's story.
I understand. I'm just saying that it's like, now, there were notable bad writings. It's for me, what makes writing bad is not what they do, but reasoning and functionality.
Yes.
You know, like you can't introduce a Chekhov's gun and let your enemy use the Chekhov gun inappropriately. You know, like the second the bad guy will have grabbed that, Dodge would have known the power he holds there. And she freely gave it to him.
Yep.
Why would she ever give it back? Why would she not just instantly win right there? It would be no different than like Thanos in the MCU when he gets the Reality Stone. How the heck did he lose after that point? The Reality Stone is so broken because he's able to just change reality at will, but yet he still just stops using it. Austin? That reasons away good story writing.
No, I agree. And the thing is I think
people get Netflix mad at me, but I will complain about that.
I think Netflix does a poor job on some of the things that happen in the show. And the thing is I only wanted you to start watching this show was so because I feel like I remember when I introduced you to Sam. And, you know, you were like, wow, this is one of the one of my favorite things ever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, really? You know, I just knew deep down after you read that, I said, he needs to read Lock and Key. And mm-hmm. I was hoping that this premise would get you wanting to read the graphic novels. And I was like, well, I have those in physical form, so he can read those at any time. And, you know, I was just like, well, let's get him into that, you know, see if he likes it. And what I've seen of it, you would love the graphic novels compared to the show. The show is its own thing. They do take things from the graphic novel, mm-hmm. of course. But I think the graphic novel is superior compared to the show. Do I like the show? Yeah, I like the show. But is it, like, as good as the graphic novel? No. Not even close. You know, and I think season two is probably, you know, season two and three are probably decent seasons. But, you know, I don't feel that, you know, it blew me away. Yeah. You know, it was trying to be too kid-friendly. And I hated it for it. I still hate it today for it. And we'll see.
Yeah, my issue with the show is not that it's kid-friendly. My issue is that they have written poorly on key aspects. You can write poorly on character motivation. You can write poorly on characters' backstory. You do not write poorly when it comes to goals or characters' like powers. Because when you write poorly on a power, that comes into play the legitimacy. Now, you can write poorly on power, then retcon it with rules. You know, I think about this with Sandman all the time. So many times I think about how, like, Sandman has, like, all this power, but then there's moments where he just appears weak. And then you find out, like, there's rules to being the Endless. You know, like, the whole thing of, like, oh, we can't interfere. Like, we're not allowed to kill humans. Which allows humans to kind of go rampant most of the time. Which makes sense. Why they're like, this is my domain. Or like, you know, like, oh, freaking hell is being mean to me. But I can't do nothing. But they can't do nothing because, like, I'm in their domain. But I have a higher domain. And it's like, yeah. We have to be cordial with each other. They at least do a good job of explaining why those don't make sense and why it's like inconsistency. They didn't do that in the Marvel movie, which is why I always got frustrated at the Reality Stone, because it was too overpowered and they didn't explain it away. They just allowed Thanos to do some crazy stuff and then he never did it again. And I'm like, that's stupid. They should have gave rules to it. Any world, right? Just any functional rules. Anyways, I'm sorry. Austin, we're running late. Do you have anything last thing to say?
The only last thing I like to say is, because some people did not see it, there is three cameos in this season. Okay. So the ending of the show, the paramedics that show up to Rufus's house.
I was frustrated at that. Go on.
Yep. So the two paramedics are actually in the graphic novel as themselves, and they are the writers. That is Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez. They actually cameo themselves in their own book as paramedics. And they also cameoed as paramedics in the show.
Did they intentionally make the bad ending moment there?
I think they did.
Because there's the scene where, like, the one dude puts the bag up. And he looks up to Rufus and he's like, you gonna be okay, buddy? He's like, yeah, I'm gonna be fine. And then it cuts back to Rufus. Rufus says one thing. And then it cuts back to the paramedic. And it's a different paramedic standing there on the frame. He's like, we're gonna need to go, buddy. You're gonna need to get out. And my brain went, wait, what? Did they just change the actor of the paramedic mid-scene? And I had to rewind. Maybe. They cut it in a way to make it seem like there was a chance. I got frustrated. I'm like, wait, is that supposed to be like a hint at something?
Well, the two paramedics that is Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez, mm-hmm. are the ones that are in the ambulance.
I get
it. They open up the door and that's them two.
Yeah, I get it. Just how they cut that scene made it seem like in mid-scene, the person changed.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is me trying to focus too much on the storytelling, thinking there's going to be more at play, like it's a mystery. Because anytime there's inconsistencies or something weird is, I instantly start going like, oh, maybe this is because this is actually X person or that person. And then it's just nothing.
So
you'll have to look at the scene after we're done recording and tell me what you think.
So do you remember the scene where Brody finds out about the head key and he takes it to that shop and he goes to unlock that dude's head?
Yeah, yeah.
Without consent?
Yeah, yeah.
That is Tom Savini.
Okay.
Tom Savini is the guy that did all the special effects for the Friday the 13th movie, and he's like one of the biggest special effects artists of all time.
Okay.
He did Dawn of the Dead, all of those.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why they did that is because Tom Savini is a huge fan of Lock and Key's graphic novel.
Okay.
And I don't know if you know this, but like the whole premise of Lock and Key, like the town, do you know what the town's named?
No, not really.
Lovecraft.
Oh, okay.
And that stews from H.P. Lovecraft, the Cthulhu writer, the guy mm-hmm. that invented Cthulhu and stuff. And then, you know, a couple other different horror guys. They kind of, you can see that it's very heavily inspired. Like in the graphic novel, it's very heavily inspired Cthulhu,
mm-hmm.
Like H.P. Lovecraft. So that's another thing why I like it. But that's the only things I wanted to talk about. So we're going to talk about season two next week, right? And
yeah,
we'll see how what you think about that.
Here's hoping. I think they have the ability to make it like solid and good. I hope the writing gets a little cleaner, and they just touch up on things, or at least they start trying to explain things away, because that's going to be my frustration and concerns. The one thing I will say is that a lot of the special effects and everything, pretty solid. It was enjoyable to watch for the quality of things. There was some where it was like, that looks like budget special effects fire or stuff like that. But other than that, like, it was pretty good. Anytime that they would put the key in the back of the head, I visually felt like upset. Like, I did not like that visual of seeing a key enter in the back of the head. I don't like it. Oh, I don't like it.
I don't like it.
But yeah, no, I'm excited. We'll see how it goes, and who knows? Maybe I'll like it next week. Maybe I'll love it next week. Maybe I'll absolutely hate it. Maybe it will be unredeemable. Who knows? Boston.
I hope not.
Boston. I appreciate you joining me on this episode of Brothers and Joes, and good conversation, I felt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much for stopping by. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And see you guys next week, where we do Lock and Key Season 2.